Darren McGuire is going to speak to us today on healthy emotions and helping parent your child through emotions. And so she did a talk last semester that's kind of the basis of this. I hope some of y'all went back and listened to that. And so this is the same handout. We're going to kind of jump to the end, but I'll let her talk about that. So, Darren, you want to come on? Can I pray for you?
That'd be great.
God, thank you for this morning. Thanks for bringing us all here and just for a moment to sit and be still and with adults. That's a gift. And so thanks for Dara and her willingness to speak. I'm just grateful for her story, how you've written it and gifted her uniquely in the area of emotions and emotional intelligence and parenting our children through emotions. So thanks for all the work you've done to bring her to this point. And I just pray that you would speak through her this morning, that we could hear directly from you how you feel about emotions and how best to move forward in the task of parenting that you've given us. So I pray for peace and open ears, and that we would just really hear from you this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. As she said, there was an initial talk that this is coming out of. How many of you have not heard that talk, either because you weren't here or you haven't listened? So I have a few for sure. So the handout here is the same one from that last talk. So you can go back and listen to it. Not because it's just so great or compelling, but I think it's a critical foundation for this talk, because everything we do flows out of what we believe. And we have all been conditioned by a lot of different influences to believe some right and wrong things about negative emotions. And we're going to parent out of those inevitably. I've done a lot of thinking on this topic, and I still caught myself the other night. My daughter was worried about the outfit we had picked for school the next day, because she was afraid she was going to get, people were going to think she looked silly. And the first thing out of my mouth, you know, was, well, you don't have to worry about what they think. Like, how many times did I hear that as a kid when I was worried about what people thought of me? And it just popped right out. And I was like, no, she is worried. I mean, it doesn't help her for me to tell her she doesn't have to worry, because she is worried already. And so that doesn't fix it by saying that it doesn't matter what those people think. She needed my understanding and my sympathy. And so it's going to happen. And I think it's critical, before we just jump into talking about tools for dealing with our children's emotions and perspective for dealing with our children's emotions, to really think about and process how we experience our emotions and what God thinks about that. So I would encourage you to go back to that if you haven't. And we are going to flip over to the back side of this page, and we're going to focus in mainly on that very bottom section that says troubleshooting, because I think that is where we had to fly last time. And I think the reason I'm being brought back is because people had a lot more questions about that section, like the what do we do section of the talk. And I totally get that and appreciate that. And so we're going to zoom in on that a little bit today. So first things first, a little perspective. A lot of parenting is enduring with hope. And so we always have to remind ourselves, in the moment that we want to fix something they're doing, we have to remember the why we're parenting, which the hope of our parenting is, we hear it a lot at Perimeter, to deploy what? Mature and equipped disciples of Christ. Our kids, that six-month-old is going to be a grown-up. He's going to be in your shoes one day, having to make really important decisions, fighting for a good marriage, trying to be godly in the workplace, trying to have good friendships, trying to walk with God. And so we're getting those little people to that place. So it can't be so much about stopping them from having tantrums. It has to be more about training them to be healthy adults. So that's my first little tidbit of perspective. You're forming their character, not changing their behavior. So that's a little heart check if you ever find yourself just wanting to parent them in something, correct something, but your desire is just to fix a behavior, then it's good to just remind yourself of that. And then also that I believe very strongly that they were born into being controlled by sin, and they do not yet have the Holy Spirit's empowerment to fight their sin, their worldview that they are the king and they are the most important thing in the world. They need the Holy Spirit. And so there's going to be a lot of investment. A million times you're going to be saying these things and training on these things and coaching and praying with them and for them in these things. Nothing should really be a quick fix, because it's about changing their hearts, freeing them from sin, which of course we can't do, just to be clear, but leading them to the God who can free them from their sin. So with all that said, though, I think what people were left wondering last time was like, okay, but what do you really do? And it's true, we do not allow manipulation in our house. And that is what I will call tantrums, screaming, crying, or displaying emotion to get what they want. And that can be really confusing and hard to discern. And often they are experiencing an authentic emotion, because I made really clear last time we want to be careful not to discipline an authentic emotion, or redirect them in an authentic emotion, but to sympathize and help them identify it and learn how to see it and communicate it and experience fellowship with God and others in their negative emotions, sadness, disappointment, anger, frustration, all of those. But often they can use displays of emotion, dramatic displays of emotion, to try and fix their circumstances to get what they want. They're disappointed that you're not going to buy them a toy on this trip to Target, so they do the scream cry. And so we are going to talk a lot more about that, because there is a lot of that, and we don't manipulate in our parenting, because we see God as having dealt with us very directly. And so in modeling our parenting after how he is a father to us, we're pretty straightforward in what we do, and it pretty much all comes out of the book that Monty also uses, what he does. So we've heard from him before. So specifically in the realm of emotions, we see that God gives promises and instruction. He says, I'm your God, I made you, I know what's best for you. Here is my way, and you should walk in it. And when we don't, there are consequences, both directly from him, but also just the natural consequences of sin, the brokenness that exists in the world and comes. So he doesn't hold out his love or our salvation as conditional on good behavior. He leads us to trust him and obey, but knowingly provides for our failings in the blood of Christ. So we see that as a model, and so we give clear instruction. There are consequences for disobeying that instruction because we love them and we want good for them in this life and eternally. And so for us, that means we don't manipulate. And this is a little gray, and some of it's going to sound critical, but I think there are a lot of subtle ways to manipulate your child's behavior. One is we don't bribe or reward obedience. For example, finishing dinner, you get a treat. In order to get them to finish dinner, you get a treat. We do have treats sometimes. good behavior sticks that earn you screen time. I've heard that one lately. And this one, those things aren't bad, but if they're trying to get your child to obey, I think that it's communicating the wrong thing, because obedience is its own reward, because it is the way of God, which is the way for which we were made. And when God has won our hearts, then we delight in his way. So that, to me, again, it's subtle, and rewards are not necessarily a bad thing, but we expect obedience, and we encourage obedience without the use of rewards. Redirecting is distracting your child when they are expressing a negative emotion. We have to leave our kid's friend's house, and he's thrown into a fit of despair. And we respond, hey, how about in the car we watch a show? Or when we get home, we'll have one of your Halloween candies. And again, it's subtle, but this plucks them out of a meaningful moment for our own ease. This is an opportunity to help them understand what they're feeling, why they're feeling it, and to communicate that to others and to God so that they might experience the comfort of fellowship and intimacy in their sadness or disappointment. And it also trains them that they can manipulate you because their tears got them a show. So the next one I am really guilty of, the mom voice. I always try to apologize to them when I catch myself doing this. That's, you know, the tone that you can use when you're trying to affect change in their behavior. But, like, Cal McGuire, what are you doing? I have that. It's, and when I catch myself doing this, it's a good gauge for me of how I'm parenting. I noticed this a few months ago that I was doing it a lot, and I realized that I had been lazy in my discipline. I had been regularly skipping over opportunities to talk to them intentionally about their sin, give spankings, and pray with them and forgive them. I had been doing more shaming them with my tone and with phrases like, why would you do that? And I think a hard season, I had a third baby, and it almost always is inconvenient to stop and have an intentional conversation, and time of discipline and prayer and forgiveness with our children. And so I was trying to do the easy thing where I could keep doing the dishes, but from across the room, use my tone of voice to get them, to behave. And they actually, because we have this language in our house and we talk about these things a lot, you know, they called me out on it. Like, Mom, you were harsh with me. And that, from the lips of a four-year-old, is crushing. And then this last one is big. Holding our affections or our well-being over their heads to get them to comply. You're making Mommy sad right now. I've heard people do that a lot. It would make me so happy if you cleaned up your mess. Don't you want to make Mommy happy? And it's subtle, because it's true that sin has real consequences in our relationships, right? We do hurt people when we disappoint them or don't take opportunities to show care for them, like cleaning up our messes. And we need to take opportunities to communicate about that stuff and to apologize to each other and restore the relationship. But the threat of a broken relationship shouldn't motivate obedience. The threat of a broken relationship shouldn't motivate obedience. Love and trust should. And it's just a really mature concept for a young child to ask them to be motivated out of a Holy Spirit supplied selfless consideration of others. It's just beyond them in general, I think. It's good to introduce them to that. Like, here are the ways that your sin is affecting the people in our family or your friends. They need to hear those things, but to try and use it to motivate them to obey, I don't think is a good approach. And so practically, I avoid situations where I might be tempted to employ one of those tactics. I think it's just an intense season with young children, and there are countless opportunities in a day where you're having to have these intentional interactions with them over their struggles, and there are just a lot of places in our society that aren't kid-friendly, and so it's just wise, I think, to avoid those situations when you can. And yeah, like, we still have to go to the grocery store, right? Maybe in an intense season like I'm in with my 15-month-old right now, where taking something from her, changing her direction, stopping her from doing something, her immediate response is a scream cry blend. So, yeah, maybe in a season like that, you think, you know, I'm just going to go to the grocery store the next couple months at 8 o'clock at night after the kids are in bed. Stuff like that. So that's just a little practical. So what we do in these situations is we try to help them identify what they're feeling. We sympathize. And all of that is in the first talk, this process. And we help them to tell God, remember the truth, and ask for help. That's our little thing that we go through all the time with them. And they know it by heart now and are starting to do it themselves as six and four-year-olds. So we do that, and then we expect from them also to not manipulate. And I think here, don't underestimate your child's ability and drive to manipulate you. I have the confidence by the third time around that, like, I started seeing this in her really young. I don't know, between 9 and 12 months, probably, maybe earlier. It became clear when her cries were a cry of genuine need or a cry of manipulation. So don't doubt yourself with that. Start to look for it. The screaming with no tears, there's a tone. My middle child has always had like a distinct, it is like the cartoon wah noise. Like, he actually does that and throws his head back. It's just the telltale sign that he's trying to get a response out of me with his tears. And here's the trick. The stage is going to be one you have to endure with patience and humility, because being careful not to discipline, shame, or bribe a child when they're having an emotion will mean that they have emotions that come out in very public environments, and that you're just having to listen to it all day long, even if you're at home. And in those moments, it's very hard not to just want them to stop above all else. But supporting the expression of their feelings and requiring obedience can and should go hand in hand, just as it does in our walk with God. Our big things are we endure with them in their emotions. We don't ever change course in response to a negative emotion, like, ever. Even if I was going to change my mind about something, if they have, and even if it's a genuine emotion, they're sad about something, I don't change course then. Like, here's an example. My son asked to go outside. And I say, no, it's almost time to get ready for bed. We're going to stay inside. And then he cries. And my response could be, well, you know, what harm could it do? We'll go outside for 10 minutes. That's fine. And I think the problem with that is that it encourages manipulation, as we've discussed. Like, they learn that, oh, the crying got her to change her mind. It also trains them that negative emotions are something to be fixed. Which that one's really subtle, but is a really common thing in our culture and something I grew up on, that you don't sit in your emotions, that does no good. Just find a way to avoid them or get out of them. Whether it's, my mom's often with me was, let's get ice cream. Somebody hurt your feelings, let's get ice cream. And I think it just prevents them from ever really having the opportunity to connect with the Lord in their hurts, which as an adult is a really big deal, because a lot of the circumstances that make us sad or angry or disappointed as an adult cannot be fixed. Like, oh, actually, we will just go outside. Most of this stuff we can't fix. And so if we haven't learned how to sit in disappointment, we will act out of disappointment with coping mechanisms or whatever it may look like. So we don't ever change course. So what I would do in that situation, instead of saying, oh, okay, well, we could go outside for 10 minutes, then I would sit with him and I would say, yeah, that's disappointing. I'm sorry you're disappointed. And he has his emotion. And then if it escalates to something that I start to see is manipulative, and him trying to change my mind or just be dramatic and get attention, which we talk a lot about that in the first talk, then we do have consequences for obvious manipulation. So that, the key there is we define terms really clearly. We make sure, I'm doing this with Bridget right now, my one-year-old, every opportunity, which is 1,000 times a day, where she makes a whiny noise, I say, that's whining. That's not okay. No whining. They learn, y'all, just like they learn the word shoe and food and all those things, water. She knows whining. And once I'm confident that they know that they're doing something that's disobedient, then there is a spanking for doing it. So I think the key there is you make sure they know what they're doing wrong, and you make sure you're clear that you're not trying to just change their behavior, that your heart really is to shape their heart. You're not acting out of anger or frustration or exhaustion. So you check their motivation, you check your motivation, and make sure that they're clear on what the consequence is for. At 15 months, I am convinced that Bridget knows that she is getting a spanking for whining, because there are just that many opportunities in our day where what she's doing is not out of sadness, it's out of manipulation. So that is my content for today, and I wanted to leave a lot of time for questions and discussion, because I think that was the big gap in the last time. There was too much content and not enough time to process and talk about it. So we're going to take like a 5-minute break, and y'all think about what else you might, questions you have, thoughts you have on the subject, things you might want to talk more about. And if there's anything else under that troubleshooting list on the handout that you guys want to zoom in on, we can do that as well. So let's take 5. All right. Let's bring it together. Sounds like y'all are already having some... Oh, am I on? Yeah, you are. Okay. Sounds like y'all are already diving into some good discussion. So let's bring it together and have it as a whole group so that we can all benefit from everyone's thoughts. So we'll dive in, and Kelsey's going to walk around with the mic just because people will want what you say or ask to be on the recording. So don't be shy. And let's dive in. Who wants to get us going? Thoughts, comments, experiences.
Hey, so I have a 12-month-old mm-hmm. son, and he is definitely showing signs of understanding when he's doing something that he's not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Like there's a place in our living room that every time, you know, we turn around, he starts going for it, the vent in the floor that we've told him no, always he'll look back at us. He'll say, no, Caleb, not for Caleb. You know, and he'll like look and then, you know, crawl faster. It's like he knows. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant thing. And I'm wondering, what would you say at that 12-month stage and he's not responding to no or stop? What do I do?
We spank. Yeah, that, honestly, somebody's advice to me was as soon as they start rolling over on the changing table, is like a key time to start spanking for disobedience, especially when it's in the name of their safety. No is one of those words they have to learn the meaning of. I saw somebody once, their child running towards the street, they just yelled, danger, danger, danger. And it's like, she doesn't know what that means. That's not helping her. So I think there's probably a lot out there about, you know, non-spanking ways to teach your child, safety guidelines. I believe, and I think a lot of people in our church believe, that it's just our responsibility to give spankings. The other thing I like about spankings is it's just over. You know, it's fast, and when it's done, there's forgiveness, and it's over. And a lot of other styles of giving consequences is kind of holding it over their heads, and it endures for a long time and involves some shaming and... especially at 12 months, there really is no other way to give a consequence to a 12-month-old. Sometimes in environments like social environments, it would be like, we're going to take a time out from playing, a break. You're going to lose the privilege to play right now, and I would just have to hold them in my lap and keep them from moving. But I don't think that's your best way of training. Necessarily. Do older moms want to chime in on that? I would appreciate.
Well, something you've told me once is know when to remove the trigger and when to discipline. So,
you
like,
can't
if it's
remove
a floor vent, can you put an ottoman over it? Or put a, I mean, that was really helpful for me to just, like, walk around my house and be like, do I want to discipline for this decorative item every day, all day, or do I want to just
I think
put it
that's
away?
At Carol and Suzanne. They talk about grandma's vase or something. They're like, just take the vase
put
off the
away.
Coffee table.
I wonder if you could move a piece of furniture over top of it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's easier.
So my follow-up question to that is, what does your conversation then look like for a 12-month-old?
Mm-hmm. I think exactly what she's already saying is perfect. No, that's, you know, not for Caleb, not, and like pointing to it, making it clear. And we do start to use the word disobedience very early. That's disobedience. We said no, you disobeyed. So that's another word that we're defining for them from a very early age.
And then are you praying with them after that, even at that young age?
Not often, no.
And then can I ask one more question while I have it? Okay, my other question too is, how do you, I'm not saying it's wrong or whatever, I'm just trying to get,
yeah,
how do you justify spanking, like, if he's hitting and I'm disciplining him for hitting and then I'm spanking him, mm-hmm. I have a really hard time, like, that doesn't make sense.
Does like, that confuse them?
Gentle hands, and yeah. I'm sitting here spanking him. So I don't, mm-hmm. how do you justify that?
Or I've heard that a lot. The distinction in my mind is they aren't anybody's authority, and if they're trying to control somebody by hitting them or getting what they want by hitting them, that's an inappropriate use of their hands. For me as an adult, as their mom, I am called to give a consequence with a happy heart, not an angry heart, to my child when they're disobeying for their good. That is my job. That's my responsibility. That is an appropriate use of my hands. It's not for them. Is that, I would love for older moms to chime in on that one. Mm-hmm. Can you say that again into there?
Oh, so sorry. I tell my 5-year-old, you're hitting out of anger, and that's not okay. And mommy shouldn't hit you out of anger either. So when I discipline mm-hmm. you, it's always out of love and never out of anger.
Yep. Perfect.
This is from Monty, and I've heard good reasons for and against this, but he recommends not using your hand to spank, whereas the hit is with the, you know, that infringement is with your child's hand, and I think Monty says you don't want your child to associate your hand as anything other than affection, whereas you know, something else can be used as a tool, I guess. But I've heard arguments that were good for and against that.
So I'm having a hard time right now communicating with my now 21-month-old and having a conversation with her about why something was wrong. And I don't know if she's getting it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the end, we're like, you know, I'm trying to explain about what being sorry for, you know, your actions and your sin is. And I don't know. I'm trying to be so consistent, but she just looks down and shakes her head, no.
Yeah.
Do I just keep going, or is there
I wouldn't expect a repentant response for a long time. Okay. Would you guys agree with that?
It makes me feel better because the no, I'm in.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, well.
I want to say more around, and it depends on the kid. I think kids who are naturally very emotional, they feel when they've done something wrong, and there's an expression of that. Not that they yet have the Holy Spirit necessarily, but they're just more sensitive to other people's feelings and approval and stuff. But so that could happen earlier, but I feel like with my two, I didn't start to see a real, like, sense of the weight of what they had done until at least like 4. And even then it's spotty at best. Like occasionally something really seems to hit home with their comprehension. And I don't think that means they're not understanding what you're saying. I think it means they just don't feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. And you can't force that, right? That's a work of God in their hearts.
Okay. So, so both parents are home and one parent disciplines, spanks my daughter. So the first time my husband ever spanked her, she gave him this look, like this mm-hmm. like pouty look with her lip out and everything. As she's staring at him, giving him this look, walks over to me, climbs up on my lap and gets a hug. Will not let my husband touch her or hug her. Like if he tries to hug her and say, like, you know, explain to her, like, I'm sorry, but you know, this is for your own good. She was climbing up on the table.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, don't get near me.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that she was like really mad. It was like, how do you break that barrier and let them know that, like, you know, this is for your own good. Let me kind of comfort you after mm-hmm. punishing you because you needed that punishment. And I mm-hmm. felt so bad for my husband. He just about cried.
Yeah, that's rough. I would think that's something that's probably gonna level out over time. Like, was this kind of early, one of the early times that one of you had ever spanked her? Yeah. Is this recent, or has he continued to spank her since? Yeah, I think you can expect for that to get better. But also I definitely wouldn't try and make her accept his comfort, you know, like, I think we give our kids space. Like, if they just, last night even, my 6-year-old had a consequence with my husband before bed, and he asked her, you know, do you want to kiss goodnight? And she said no. And that, you know, that's her choice. And he's not like, there's no, again, that emotional manipulation of like, come on, give daddy a kiss. Like, you know, I love you, that sort of stuff. Like, she didn't want to kiss. And that was the end of it. So I think that's an opportunity to just respect that and not put heavy expectations on them of how they should show their affection to you. I think, too, just don't encourage that as the mom, like, oh, I'm the sweet comforter lover and daddy's the meanie. Don't just sit in that and luxuriate in it. Support him, be equal partners in it for sure. But I would think that'll kind of, she'll learn that, you know, I would wonder if that's not manipulation. But so if he doesn't, you know, change his course. But yeah, she may just have a hard time with it. And yeah, that wouldn't be unusual.
On that, I was just going to say, make sure that both parents are doing the same form of discipline, you know, because that way it's not one person that's the bad guy, you know, and one person's the good guy. Mm-hmm. But talking about what you said about the rules, you know, and enforcing them, it's okay, you know, whether they understood you or not. If they're house rules or family rules, you know, then we talk about those. And why we have family rules is because this is what God put in the Bible for how we can live and be a happy family. And you give them that framework that we don't do things. You know, they may see it at school or in the yard playing with the neighbors, but our family rules say that we don't hit, for example.
Yeah, we have to talk about that a lot now. With our 6 and 4-year-old are definitely noticing that we do things differently in our house than other people do. And that's how we talk about it every time. We have to do what we believe is best, and they don't have to do that. And that's a hard thing for a kid to understand. But
I have a question. It's kind of a two-part, but they're kind of related. First, if you're at home and, like, let's say my 15-month-old is in her high chair and she knows darn well she's made the manipulation face, like you mentioned, and taking the food and dropping, it's not always necessarily appropriate to, like, take her out and spank her bottom. I mean, is there a way of discipline that's not necessarily hand or, like, spoon to bottom, like popping her hand in a certain instance? Mm-hmm. And the compound question of that is, how do you handle discipline in public? Mm-hmm. Like, you mentioned specifically the whining. Like, how would you address that with your 15-month-old daughter if you were in public eating at a restaurant?
Yeah. I do the forearm in her high chair. I think the point is just to see what creates a little sting without a larger pain, right? Like, you want just a sting. So you kind of have to gauge that, what you'll use, where you use it. But I do with my 15-month-old on her forearm. And again, yeah, watching for that obvious, like, I saw, you know, the obvious rebellion moment where she, like, threw her food on the floor or whatever. When it's really clear, I would definitely spank for that. And then out in public, my hope is that I'm consistent enough at home that in public, it's not as big of an issue. I have, before pinched this underarm skin is very sensitive, in public. I can't believe I'm saying all this stuff on a recording. I mean, I'm like, I feel good about it before the Lord. Like, I believe my heart was in the right place. And like, that is a really inconspicuous way to give a consequence to a very small child. Yeah, a 15-month-old, for example, a 1-year-old. With the older kids, there comes a point probably around 2.5-ish where you can defer it until later and their memory is long enough. Like, we will. And a lot of people would say, you just leave. Like, the people who are really hardcore would say, you could have a buggy full of groceries, and if your child is doing something that is that rebellious, the more important thing in that moment is to parent your child. And so you just leave and go deal with it. I don't think I've ever done that before with a buggy full of groceries. But I have. Does anybody else have other thoughts on that?
It made me think. Ted Tripp does mention in his book that a couple of times, like in a restaurant or something, he just took his kid to like a private area, you know, restroom, or took him out to the car, gave him discipline, and then came back in. So mm-hmm. like, if you can't completely leave, maybe step away to somewhere private mm-hmm. and do it, and then because you also don't want to shame them in public either, like in front of people.
Mm-hmm. Other people, right? And yeah, especially with a restaurant. I would say avoid it as much as possible in intense seasons of training. And the 15-month-old stage is just, yeah, all training all the time. They are super cute, thankfully. But, yeah, I would avoid those situations as much as possible. A restaurant especially. Golly, it's hard.
Uh-huh. As an older mom, and I think we're all keeping our mouths shut a little bit, we did not do this perfectly. It is not easy, and you're going to mess up a whole lot. But if you start with a good foundation and think it through with your husband, and you're on the same page, you have to be on the same page, then you've got a much better chance with your children as far as discipline. But we tried a lot of different things, and we failed at a lot of different things. But I just want you to know that you're never going to do it perfectly. But you love your child, and you figure out what works for each child, too.
And apologize when you're wrong.
Oh, and I have apologized profusely to my children because I have gotten a lot wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just want y'all to relax yourselves because we're never going to do it perfectly.
That's great. Thank you. I think that was a big one the last time was getting on the same page with your husband on this stuff. So we can get there eventually. Let's let this question happen first.
I was just going to piggyback off of some of those. And with one of these troubleshooting questions that's on the page, when your good discipline of them causes an emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. The conversation that follows. So, yeah, an example, even for as young as a 2-year-old, when there's a sadness in the wake of a consequence, or with my oldest, it was often anger. Is often anger, indignation. We talk about it. We help them identify what they're feeling. And then we don't apologize for the discipline. So we sympathize with what they're feeling. Like, yeah, you feel angry right now because, you know, you've had a consequence in your sin, and you feel caught, and you feel, you know, all these things. Help them unpack what they're feeling, but we don't apologize for having spanked them, because we believe very clearly that was our responsibility. We did that out of love. We're trying to rescue them from their sin, right? Like, get them out of their enslavement to sin. So, but yeah, it should cause some feelings. I think if you think about it as an adult, you know, when my husband points out something that a way I've wronged him, man, first it's like I'm angry and I'm defensive. Then it's like guilt. Then it's sad. Then, you know, all the things. So I think that's not a wrong thing, and you can kind of help them understand it.
Okay, so I guess my question is, how did you and your husband get on the same page with this? Because I feel like I've sat in a few sessions about discipline and my husband mm-hmm. hasn't.
Yeah.
And he's not the type of person that I'd be like, hey, you should read this book. He might, but mm-hmm. based on the number of books I've been given, like, I haven't even read them all.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you go about having that conversation?
Yeah.
And figuring it out?
I think a big one for us was relationships with other couples. A lot of what we do because couples who were further along than us that we both spent time with, we watched them parent their kids together. And that, I think, is probably the most meaningful way to get your influences anyway, is in the context of a relationship with people you respect and trust. And then pray would be a big one. As with anything in our marriages, the hope to fix each other is, I think, not futile, but can be it can lead to more hurt than good, I guess. And so the expectation being that we are called to honor him for who he is, no matter if he gets on the same page as us on something. And like that being your disposition towards the Lord, praying that he would do that in your heart, but also praying for opportunities for your husband to get the kind of influence that we get to have as moms, and praying that he would want it, because it's out there if he wants it. So yeah, prayer, relationships, I think if you know about something that's out there that he might not know about, not necessarily a book, but like, oh, this young family's weekend is coming up and I know that Monty's going to speak or something like that, or just the recordings that are online, like saying, hey, this has been really a huge part of my days lately. Like I'm trying to figure out how to navigate this. It's been really hard. Would you sit with me while I watch this video from Perimeter's website? It's not about fixing him, but it's about, I need to hear this because Electa is making my days difficult lately. You know, like there's truth in all of that. It's not, you have some thoughts.
As an older mom, I would suggest that y'all, you sit down with your husband at some point when it's not an immediate reaction to a discipline situation, but talk about how y'all were raised. What discipline methods did he grow up with? What did you grow up with? Because I know for my husband, his dad was very authoritative, and his word, it was his way or the highway. And my parents weren't like that. They would let me, as not as a one-year-old, but as, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 and up, talk about the issue with them respectfully. As long as I wasn't being disrespectful, we could talk about something that I didn't like, and their way usually prevailed. I don't recall, you know, being in a real given a lot of, you know, choice about some things, but I could discuss it with them. And he didn't grow up with that, so when our children started talking with him as a 4 or 5 year old, you know, he felt like they were talking back to him all the time, where they're just trying to talk to him. And so we had to work through that. And we ended up trying to talk about looking at our friends that had children a couple of years ahead. We would talk about, well, look at how they're handling this. What do you think we'll do when our kids turn 8, you know, and that kind of thing.
When you were talking about your oldest whining, and you were saying you tell her, we don't whine, that's whining, we stop. How often do you discipline her every single time she whines? Or is there like a warning, and then if you do it again, or how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Did you mean
by discipline, I mean
with the youngest? So did you?
Oh, I thought you said the oldest was whining. Whoever whines.
The 15-month-old.
Sure.
Everybody
okay.
whines.
Okay, yeah. Whoever, all of the above.
All the time, everybody. Oh, no. The 6-year-old, not as much anymore. With the 15-month-old and still with the 4-year-old, this was probably his biggest, my middle child. I think it's been a 3-year process. I'm looking at Kelsey because she's been in it with me. He has just been his go-to thing. So, yeah, I'd say mostly in the early ones, it's the defining the term, making sure it's understood, and probably, you know, a few times a day when it's very obvious, and I say no whining, and then she continues to whine. There's a spanking. I think that's roughly what we're probably doing right now. Mostly it's reminders and defining the term right now, and then a few times a day, yeah, taking the opportunity to give a consequence. And then, yeah, as they get older, we expound on our definition of what is whining, and like why whining is disobedience, because it's manipulation. And that probably starts to come in there, you know, between 2 and 3 when they're really, their verbal and comprehension is really ramping up.
This is kind of a long answer to a simple question, but I was big on consequences with the kids so that they could learn, if I do this, this will happen. As Dr. Phil says, children should be able to predict with 100% accuracy the consequences of their behavior. So, like, we were watching the kids for a week, and I had seen little instances of disobedience with our granddaughter, and so I told my husband, we're going to have a come to Jesus meeting this week. I just know it. You just wait. And so we were sitting at the table, and some of you have heard this bacon story, but we were sitting at the table, and I had put a piece of bacon on the 18-month-old's high chair tray, and she immediately swished it off onto the floor. And so I thought, okay, here comes the consequence. And I said, oh, we don't do that in our house. We don't push food onto the floor. I said, when we're done eating, you're going to have to pick that up and put it in the trash. So when we were done eating, she started toddling away, and I said, no, you need to come back and pick that up and put it in the trash. No. So I thought, okay, here comes the come to Jesus meeting. And so I stood her in front of the bacon and must have repeated 1,000 times, you're going to obey Nana and pick up the bacon and put it in the trash. No. And she tried to evade. She crawled under the table. I stood her right back up by the bacon. She went over by the high chair to play around, stood her back up. It took an hour and a half. I mean, about halfway through, she even bent down halfway and then went, like, I just can't obey you. And so, I mean, she got to the point where she was going to sleep standing up. And so I was sitting in the next room, and as soon as I would see her head bob, I'd say, Avon, pick up that bacon and put it in the trash. And the screaming would start again. Took an hour and a half. But the next day, I put something on her tray, and she went. She stopped herself. It's like, that was not worth it. So I was big on consequences. If you were using a toy to hit another child, the phrase I used a lot when they were growing up is, I'm sorry you chose to do that. I'm sorry you chose to disobey me. I'm sorry you chose to use your toy as something to hit somebody. We're going to have to take it away now. So that was a consequence. It went way up. Our son was, I think, 2nd grade, and he had gotten a pink slip at school because he went out of the yard to retrieve a ball, so he got written up. Our older daughter, of course, tattled on him when they got home. You know, Phil got a pink slip at school. Well, the parent had to sign it to return for the kid to get back in school the next day. All evening, I gave him all kinds of opportunities. Well, Phil, how was your day? How did it go? Fine. Well, good. And so at dinner, we talked about, you know, the day, and everybody's day went well. Yeah, I knew he had that pink slip in his backpack.
So I thought, all right, here's the natural consequence. I drove him all the way to school the next day, still did not say anything. I drove all the way back home because this was before cell phones. As soon as I got home, my phone rang. I'm sorry, Phil has a pink slip that you have to sign before we can let him back in school. So he had the natural consequence of being embarrassed in front of his class. He had to leave and go to the office. He had to sit in the office until, and I took my sweet time getting to the school, let me tell you, so that he had to sit in that office and think about. So we had a talk when I got there, and I said, the thing I'm most disappointed in is that you didn't feel you could tell me, that you couldn't show me this slip. All I have to do is sign my name. So anyway, it was a learning opportunity, and we never had that happen again, but consequences were big in our family. I'm sorry you chose to do that, because now this is going to happen.
We use that phrase a lot too. In the moment, you have a choice. You can either disobey and have a consequence, or you can obey. And we do. We say that a lot to kind of reiterate or just, you know, give them a chance. Sometimes it's just obedience is right away, all the way, with a happy heart. And I said come and you didn't come, and we need to have a consequence. But yeah, sometimes we'll kind of remind them, like, you have a choice right now. You can come or you can disobey and have a consequence.
Along those lines, I was just going to say, you feel like as a mom of a toddler, you know, there's just so many don'ts. Don't do this. No, we don't do that. But if you try to focus on, you know, what we've said about disobedience, the thing in our house that a mentor parent to us taught us is that it's disrespect, dishonesty, and disobedience. And that covers everything. If you can focus on that, and that will go with you through teenagehood, you know, because those are the things that have those consequences that Marcia was talking about. We are going to address them when it's disobedience, dishonesty, and what else? Disrespect, being respectful, yeah.
And lying does carry a heavier consequence in our house than any other form of disobedience, because every opportunity where I catch them in a lie is an opportunity to train them for when they're older and lies get a lot more natural and easy for them, and more dangerous for them.
I have a question for you. When I hear talks like this, I'm reminded of what I believe, and I really, like, I'm 100% with you, and I'm trying to do my best. But when I, like, think about, like, okay, here I go, I'm going to pick the kids up, I think my overwhelming emotion is just, I'm just tired.
Yeah.
This is really hard
yeah.
to do three times over, 24/7, for five mm-hmm. years now.
Yeah.
And so how do you stay fresh? How do you encourage your heart mm-hmm. to keep fighting the fight?
It's a great question.
Because it's so much easier to just yell or, I want to do it right, but I'm really tired.
Yeah. I think one thing is know yourself. I am motivated by perspective. So for me, taking the time to build up good perspective, if it's just time in the scripture, or praying or stuff like this, to remember the importance of this, both for my children and for me. I think that's the big one too. I have become 100% convinced that suffering and sacrifice do more to build character than just about anything else, any other opportunity. And motherhood is one of the greatest opportunities for sacrifice that we'll have in our lives. And it, yeah, we really can see it as an opportunity, because your character and your relationship with God are the most important things about you, as much as our culture will push on us that it is our resume and our surface level ways of developing ourselves in skills and degrees and job titles. You can run after all of those things in your life and be very impressive and still lack wisdom and maturity and a deep and meaningful and transformational relationship with your God. And motherhood is one of those things that it's forcing you back to good perspective, godly perspective on a daily basis. So in that way, it's that helps me to remember that. What are other things people
is
have?
Is there any like verses you claim or like say I'm, you know, doing the dishes and mm-hmm. I've got to stop for the trillionth time because someone's doing something. Is there any like kind of things that you remind yourself or any kind of pray for help?
Yeah.
One time I had a bad moment with my kids, just being very frustrated with them. And so when we got home, I said, when we get home, you both are going to need to go to your rooms for a little while because I need to go to my room. And so I got on my knees and I prayed. I was like, Lord, this is, it's over and 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 over continuous, the same thing that I'm dealing with, and I'm so weary. And I really felt the Holy Spirit say to me, I don't grow weary in teaching you. I don't grow weary in disciplining you. I need you to be faithful in this. I gave them to you. And I am with you. Don't grow weary. And I had to remind myself that so many times, that God does not grow weary in disciplining me about the same thing over and over and over again. And I also had to learn my kids. I'm an extrovert. They are both introverted. So too much time in places with lots of people was not easy for them. And I had to learn what worked for them and what didn't, and help them understand themselves too in that. And it was hard for me, but it was easier to recognize who they were and help them plan the days because of who they are, not who I am. The discipline was easier and lighter because I wasn't overwhelming them in their little introverted selves.
Yeah, I think space and pace, I didn't mean to rhyme those, but that worked out well, are huge in this season with kids. You will find yourself and them a lot more peaceful if you give space and a healthy pace, a slow pace. And that, I, like Gail, have the drive towards people. But for all of us in this season, I have to be very strategic about how we get our people time. And then because we do believe in, a clear structure and guidelines in our house and consequences, I am able to set us up for success. I am able to enforce rest time, even once they're well beyond the age of falling asleep during a nap, we still have alone time because we all need alone time. This job is, I mean, 20, we could say 24 hours a day, but we can with all integrity say 13 hours a day, right? Like there are some seasons where it's not 24 hours, but it is 13 hours. And when you think about that, you're like, okay, I don't just need a lunch break like someone gets at an 8 or 9 hour a day job. I need to be taking breaks throughout my day, mid-morning, mid-afternoon. I think figuring out how to build those in is critical. Your kid stopping needing sleep doesn't mean they've stopped needing alone time, especially if they're in a preschool environment. They're getting no time to just be alone and be self-directed. So you need to give them that in the afternoons. and to space to just be bored. We all need that. So I think that just strategically, yeah, is a big one for not just exhausting yourself, is making sure that you guys are taking space from each other and operating at a slower pace.
Just like Vicki said, this is a hard stage, you know, birth to six. But, you know, there's a book out, Everything I Needed to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. So the values that you're teaching your child, that your yes means yes, your no means no, you know, how your family, what your family rules are, those are the things that are going to carry them into elementary. And it will get easier when you can send a child off to school knowing that they respect your authority, because then they're going to be more successful in school to respect the authority of the teachers that they're, you know, with during the day. But it is hard. It is hard. But you have to look at it for the long term. You know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, you know.
All right, this is practical. What do you do when, and I haven't hit this yet, and so that's why any guidance right now would be appreciated. You know, you've got a toddler who can walk, and you just need to get something real fast. I don't know, let's pick a store, Target. And, you know, you're walking through, and, of course, they have the candy, the temptation right there. And, you know, it's like, no, we're not gonna have candy. And I know that different kids will respond differently, and you know, you try and teach them ahead, like, we're just gonna buy this, like, we just need this. But if they start having like a tantrum, you know, and just full out like, I want, now obviously if you give it to them, yes, it solves the problem right there, their emotions, you know, okay, we're content. If you do that, I realize you set up the expectation that they could do that again to manipulate you to get the treat that they want. So is it a case where do you let them, and again, anybody, I don't know, older moms, if you could chime in, parents of kids who've gone through toddlerhood and have experienced this, just do you let, is that an appropriate time to let your child go through that emotion, because yes, it's something they want, it's being withheld, and then, you know, do you get out of the store and then explain to them, like, when you're back in the car, or do you, and again, I'm just looking at if your kid just flies off the handle, mm-hmm. Obviously, if they're more calm, some kids may just say, like, okay, mom, what do you, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, or is it a case where do you try and do you bring snacks with you in the diaper bag, and so you say no to that snack, you pull out something like that they can eat, yeah. Or is that just the, so guidance?
I would call that redirecting, yeah. Definitely on the verge of bribing. yeah, I wouldn't do any of that, and I would just try and I try and see it as an opportunity, like this. Is an opportunity to talk to them about what they're feeling. And if they're just really losing it, like, they're not listening to you in that moment. They got to not be screaming in order to be able to hear you practically. So I don't necessarily in that moment. But, yeah, that means you have to care more about your child's heart in that moment than you do about what anybody in Target thinks about you. And that is a hard thing. It shouldn't be, but it is. Yeah, that's my thought. I don't fix, I don't redirect. And we do, yeah, we would talk about it later if they needed to calm down for sure. And my hope would be that in the training opportunities that happen at home, that typically we don't just see that level of tantrum because of the way our house runs 24/7 and has since they were babies. The kind of tantrum that escalates to that point, I think, often comes for a kid who's kind of learned how to work the system. And not that that's like, I'm not saying if your kid has done that to you before, you've like, you've done something wrong. That's not the case, because I've certainly had, especially my middle child has had those huge displays of emotions in public before, but it's not our norm. Because if it does involve screaming, that's another one that we define. This is screaming, screaming, whining, however you want to define it. Screaming is not the same as crying. Whining is not the same as crying. Screaming is manipulation. And so all of that is just, we're explaining that until we're blue in the face and have been for 7 years now. And so there is a consequence. There would definitely be a consequence later if a no to candy or a toy or whatever got a screaming response. That to me is manipulation. That's not just an authentic expression of sadness and disappointment.
Okay, so with what you're saying, like, you don't want to redirect, and what about, like, do you think it's okay to do, like, a preemptive distraction? So, you, like, say you're running into Target.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the second there's this thing right here that she is really going to want.
Mm-hmm.
Can I, like, give her a lollipop before we go in there, and then she's not going to lose it?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, right? Okay. I think that's just strategic. Okay, anybody good. Disagree with that?
I'm listening. I'm like, wait, I'm not doing this wrong. Am I?
No, because for her, it's not like you're, she doesn't know. It's like she's getting a lollipop, so she doesn't ask for the candy in the candy aisle. She doesn't, you're not offering it as a substitute. You're just offering it. Now, be warned that that could become an expectation. Trader Joe's has made my children expect for every cashier at every store to give them a lollipop.
She does expect to get a lollipop the second she walks into the doctor's office, I will say.
That too. So, yeah, they are so programmable for good and for bad. So, yeah, you have to be careful not to set expectations. So, like, travel is one that I know people talk about a lot. Like, what's our strategy for travel? And it's like, yeah, all bets are off, right? Like, you just do all the snacks, all the entertainment. But then it's like you have to deprogram them when you get home and, you know, change that expectation. The movies in the car thing, we decided not to get a TV in our van when we got a van, because I saw the expectations that other kids have that it be on every time they were in the car. Like, you could choose to have a TV, but you just have to know if you don't set the limits, their expectations will form almost instantly, and then you're setting yourself up for a conflict. One we talk about a lot in our house is, yeah, any kind of technology, shows, at just, yeah, expectations are everything. We ended up telling them that they couldn't ask to watch a show. And if they do ask, we will automatically lose the privilege for the rest of the day. I don't think that's necessarily like something people have to do, but I found that the desire to watch a show was keeping them from seeing all the other good things in our house that were available to them to do that are much more valuable than TV. And so they were less content when they thought that watching a show was an option. So I've actually learned that less TV ends up being more helpful in the long run, even though in the moment you want that shower, you feel like, if I put this show on, I can know they will not do anything terrible while I go take a shower, because they will be zombies.
What about expectations that grandparents set? Like, mm-hmm. My mom,
that's a hard one.
Plays her videos, like home videos, yeah, on her phone, and then ever since, for 2 weeks after she sees grandma, yeah, then she wants my phone. She takes my phone and she screams and yells and wants me, yeah, to play videos. And she watches the video for a second and says, all done, next video.
Mm-hmm.
And it.
Yeah, you have to just explain, like, unless you want to have a conversation with grandma, which there may be a situation where that is appropriate. We've had those before, because my husband's mom is very reasonable and very much on our team. So she's always open ears to what we ask of her, which is awesome. I've learned that's unusual. So, yeah, you can decide if it's something you want to have a conversation about. If not, just know that you are the mom, and what's best for her is that you are in charge of how you guys do things. And so you can make very clear to her, Grandma lets you do that. I do not let you do that. That is not how we use my phone. That is not how I choose to use my phone, and that is my choice as your mom. Yeah, you don't let somebody else shape how you make those choices. You know, just you're in charge.
So even at a young age, they can figure out, like, that's something that's okay with Grandma. Okay.
Totally.
Thanks so much, Dara, mm-hmm. for everything. You mentioned there are some appropriate uses of rewards. Could you give some examples?
Oh. Oh gosh. Yes. Let me think. We do lots of celebrating in our house. I think every opportunity to encourage and celebrate and call out honorable, good qualities is awesome. So, we do a lot of that. That would be a great opportunity for rewards. It's not as bait for obedience, but just to celebrate, like, I am so proud of you for this. And I'm trying to think of an instance. Oh, here's a good one. And I to this day, I don't know what I could have or should have done differently. But we moved Cal, my second, in with my first when he was 9 months old because we were going on a trip where they would have to share a room. So I was excited for them to share a room and life in general. I had seen how much benefit there was for my nephews who are just a little bit older than my kids. So I wanted them to share a room eventually, but I forced it when she was just over 2 and he was 9 months old. She was 2 and a half, almost 3. There we go. It was like she lost all reason. She climbed in his crib every night. She was so excited, so excited. She would get in his crib and bounce like a maniac, laughing maniacally. She thought it was the best and most wonderful thing ever, which was super cute, but also he was only 9 months old, so a safety hazard. And she couldn't fall asleep, she was so excited. So for probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, we would, you know, we're telling her no, we're coaching her, we're pulling her out of the room and making her sit in the hallway in the dark by herself while he falls asleep. And then we'd take her back in. Like, you lose the privilege to be in there with him because you can't keep yourself from disobeying. And then it did, yeah, it came to the point of spankings like this. We've told you many times not to do this and you can't not do it. We're giving spankings. This went on for a good 3 weeks. And it was like, for her, nothing. This was unprecedented. She was the like she is to this day, serious rule follower. So we've had our backs against the wall. And this is where I don't recommend getting yourself in those situations where your back is against the wall. But for us, we were about to travel and I had to know that they were going to sleep. And so we offered donuts for the morning if she wouldn't climb in his crib. And I think we got donuts like 12 times in a month. Because every time she didn't climb in his crib, we got donuts. And it did. It worked. She stopped climbing in the crib. I think some of that was just it normalized, right? Like the cool factor wore off. So, yeah, I don't recommend getting your back against the wall. But at the end of the day, if you're in a situation like that where, yeah, there's just life throws you curveballs, right? And you need your kids to come along with you. And sometimes it's burdensome for them. And sometimes it's going to be hard for them to obey. Does that make sense? It's nuanced, but like, I don't think it's just wrong to employ other tactics when it would benefit the whole family. And she didn't then turn around and, like, we, you know, once that sort of month was up, the expectation that she got donuts, we were like, no, yeah, it's done. You learned, and now it's done. Where this doesn't just keep going for the rest of your life. And, yeah, she got that, and she was disappointed, and we validated that, yes, that is disappointing that you no longer get donuts every other day. But, yeah, again, ultimately you're in charge, and so if you need to use something like that, and then you need to backpedal from it or retrain from it.
I think what, like, rewarding kind of the extraordinary above and beyond excellent wins too. Like, it's not like general obedience. Like, you learned a new skill. That's something we're going to celebrate. Treats mm-hmm. or not, but like kind of the above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to wrap up. Do you have any final thoughts?
Mm-mm, I don't.
Okay. Are they okay to come to you mm-hmm. afterwards yeah. on the yeah. way down? Well, thank you, Dara. As always, so helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Dara. That was great. Y'all remember, as everybody says, these are long days but short years. And the payoff as your kids get older is great when you put the time in now. And call a friend when you feel like you can't do it anymore. But just remind yourself, everybody in this room is in the same boat, and you're not alone. And it's a great calling to be a mother. And God is with you every step of the way. And listen to this podcast several times if you need to, when you need extra encouragement. So anyway, thank you all for being here. Next week, enjoy Thanksgiving with your family. I hope it's great. And for those of you with, like, my parents nor my husband's parents were involved grandparents, so I never had that issue. But I had a friend in Alabama, sometimes I call her, and her voice would just be so, yes. And I go, what is wrong? I am deprogramming my children from being at my mother's last week. It takes almost an entire week. Grandmama lets me have this for breakfast. Grandmama lets me. Well, we don't have that at home. She said, but it really took a week. So sometimes it takes some extra time to deprogram, I think.
But
after you,
a week where they were taken care of.
Right. That was the bonus. Yes, they were away from home, and she got a break, but when they came back, it was a little extra work. So take deep breaths and just remember that, because I might be a grandmother that spoils when my day comes. But anyway, y'all have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving. We will see you back in 2 weeks, and the discussion is margin.